The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 195.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show that is going to blow your mind. This gentleman is someone that I've really looked forward to speaking with because he's not only an entrepreneur, but he really understands the Fed. He understands what's going on with the global elite. But maybe even more importantly, he understands psychology and some things that I think are extremely important for you to become a better investor. So let's dive right in and welcome Mr. Jake Ducey. Jake, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show, my friend.
Thanks for having me, George. It's an honor to be on your show.
Now, some of my viewers might not know your backstory. Can you get us up to speed there?
Yeah, so kind of a weirdo. If you Google my name, you'll see more stuff for personal development. Here's my story in a 30-second nutshell. So 19 years old, freshman in college, was studying economics, playing basketball, just party, mainstream, dumbo. And I came home from Thanksgiving first semester college, and my dad showed me how the monetary system worked. And he sat me down. He also showed me the whole global elite plan. I mean, a lot of the ways things are unfolding now. And he just like red-pilled me out of nowhere. And so I went back to school and I asked my economics professor why we couldn't audit the Federal Reserve. So this was like 2011, right. Maybe 2010. And he told me to shut up, memorize my textbook. I got in a huge fight with him in class in front of the whole class. And the whole class wanted me to shut up and memorize the textbook as well. And yeah. So I dropped out of college and I was like, this is stupid. And, you know, I was really angry about what was happening in the world politically, economically, where we were headed. You know, in hindsight, it's pretty much where we are right now.
I'm sorry, Jake, what year was this?
This was like 2010, 2011.
Okay.
Yeah. So I dropped out and I read a book by Wayne Dyer, and he said, you know, you can create the life that you want. And I thought, well, if this is true and this whole system's a scam and we're living in the matrix, I'm going to drop out and see if I can become a successful writer and author and all these things. So I did some backpacking around the world, self-published a book called Into the Wind, My 6-Month Journey, Wandering the World for Life's Purpose. I wrote it when I was like 20, and so no one would publish it. So I self-published it, but I sold 20,000 copies of it out of the trunk of my car. And yeah. I did, you know, I would get tables at farmers markets next to the people selling kale, and like I did everything, you know. And so 20,000 copies is a lot in books because the average book sells only 2,500 in the lifetime. So Penguin Random House gave me a book deal for 2 books, you know, and all of a sudden I was getting paid, and then it turned into, you know, I probably done 600 high school and college speeches. I was the first motivational speaker ever on Vans Warped Tour. So like I was in the personal development space, and I really believe at the core, you know, the way this whole brainwashing system works is they convince us we're these stupid little idiots and they trap us in these terrible belief systems. You know, right. Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, you know, created a lot of this PR. And so personal development became a mission to me. Then I went online. We built 600,000 YouTube subscribers, got millions of website visits, and, you know, I built a you know, really large business. And I never bought anything because I didn't trust the system. Last couple of years, that's brought me all back to when my dad woke me up, gold, silver, mining stocks, the whole likes, started this new channel, I Love Prosperity, only in April when the lockdowns were started. And it really took off. And, you know, just that's kind of the gist.
And you recently moved from California as well. Tell us about that journey.
Yeah, so I was born, as you can tell, I look like a, you know, so I get more shit in the finance industry than the personal development industry, but, you know, some people don't like the way I look. So, I was born and raised in San Diego, you know, a little beach town called Encinitas, and lived my whole life there, third generation San Diegan. If anything, I grew up more liberal than the opposite, because it's just, that's what SoCal is. And we've been living in Maui for 4 or 5 years, but we came back because we had a baby. And so my wife wanted to have the baby in San Diego. you know, government locked us in her house. Newsom made up all, I don't want to say anything that's going to get your channel in trouble, but, you know, he said 25 million people are going to be infected with COVID in the next 30 days unless we lock it down. And that was like in February, and everyone freaked out. And I remember reading the article and I said, where did he get this number from? I mean, 25 million are going to be infected? Like, you know, it just immediately smelled like bullshit. You know, and if you look at people like, you know, Mr. Alex Jones, there's David Icke, there's a lot of people that have been predicting this stuff for a long time. You know, I didn't like the way it was rolling. None of it made any sense. And, you know, you were straight up locked in your house. You got tickets if you watched the sunset. Lifeguards patrolled the beaches. They wouldn't let you. I mean, it was legit the most ridiculous shit ever. It was a police state, yeah. And then my wife grew up in southern Utah. We're outside of St. George. And we came here to visit family. Everything was open. I went to the gym without a mask. I immediately just said, we're going home, packing our shit up, and we're out of here, you know? Yeah, right. And so that's you know, this is one of the few places that's kept everything open. I haven't met someone that's lost a job here. More importantly than mask, not mask, whatever. No one's lost a job here. And so that's why we moved here.
Yeah. So one thing I want to dive into is kind of your views on what's going on with the macro landscape, with the economy, with the Fed, just kind of download there. But then I want to go into the psychological aspect of not only becoming a better investor, but becoming successful in life. So we'll just tackle one thing. So kind of macro, how do you see the economy? How do you see the Fed? You know, you talked about gold, you talked about miners, the value of holding hard assets. Give us your views there, and then we'll go down the kind of the self-improvement path.
Yeah, look, I mean, for one, you're a million times smarter than me, you know, and I don't try to be the genius, you know, I just am interviewing really cool people. But look, I mean, you know, I think this was all planned. If you go all the way back to 1913 and, you know, you read Creature of Jekyll Island and you look at the things that J.P. Morgan said, you know, gold is money, everything else is credit. You know, they have for a long time been trying to create this world that Klaus Schwab now speaks about. You'll own nothing and be happy. And the way that they did this was by creating a central banking system, which, you know, it's a tenet of communism. And they've enslaved the whole world through a central banking system. It's, you know, as your audience knows, they've killed, 96% of the purchasing power of the dollar since that's happened. Right. And it's, you know, it's only getting worse. And I think it's convenient. There's a lot of outside distractions that distract people from what's happening. But it's a fraudulent system. It's counterfeiting. As Rick Rule, you know, one of your favorites says, if you or I did it, we'd be in prison. And it's coming to a head. You know, this is there's clearly a mass awakening going on. People are waking up to what's happening. I think the Reddit stuff's a good example of people realizing the system's broken.
Yeah, and, you know, that's interesting you mentioned that, because my concern with what's going on with Wall Street Bets and with the Reddit forum, I have several concerns, but my probably mainly is that they're getting pissed off at Wall Street. They're getting pissed off at hedge funds. They're being pissed off, getting pissed off at all these banks that got bailed out in 2008. I totally get it. But their anger, in my opinion, is misplaced. Is it the hedge fund's fault, or is it the Fed's fault for setting up the incentive structure and the politicians? Is it their fault in the first place? It's very similar to, I remember back in, 2010 or 2011, when they were doing the Occupy Wall Street. Remember that?
Yep.
And remember, I don't know if you saw the video, but Schiff went down there. Mm-hmm. And he started interviewing everyone, saying that he was, you know, he's the 1%. So let's talk about this. And his whole point was, listen, your anger is misplaced. You're pissed off at Wall Street. I get it. You've got a right to be pissed off, but you shouldn't be protesting on Wall Street. You should be protesting on Pennsylvania Avenue. You should be protesting the government and their intervention. You should be protesting all these people that destroyed the free market and created this environment where we're incentivizing people to take more and more and more risk. We're incentivizing the people on Wall Street, and now, of course, we're also incentivizing, and I would argue pushing and forcing people, the retail investor, to take on just wild risk. And is exactly what we're seeing right now with GameStop and AMC. And, you know, who knows where this ends. And a lot of people think that what's going on with GameStop hurts Wall Street and these hedge funds, but it doesn't. It might hurt a couple of them, true. But do you really think that these hedge funds, the other ones, aren't going in and front running the Robinhood people buying calls and then on the short side as well? I mean, they're manipulating this in ways that the average person on a Reddit forum can't even comprehend. But my point is that their anger's misplaced. It should really be at the Fed and the government, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're way smarter than me, but you're 100% right. But I do think it's a good opening step. But you're right. I mean, the core of the problem is this global central banking system that enables all these, you know, shitheads, for lack of better words. And so, yeah, I agree. I mean, you're right. I mean, and that's why someone like you is important with your large audience. You publish every day. You said you got this other channel three times a day. We got to educate people. But seeing, especially the Bitcoin community, I mean, it has really started to wake more people up with Bitcoin, with YouTube, with gold. Yeah. It's happening. It's obviously, it's still a lot of people in mass hypnosis, and a lot of it's by design, right? Like, these people are psychopathic geniuses, and they know that the core of the entire communist system is a central banking financial system. So, you know, they fund all the media, they get everyone pissed off about Wall Street or being black or being white or being MAGA or Antifa, and they just distract everyone from, as you said, the core problem. But I think we are making progress. It is also possible there's a false flag component that's designed to, you know, who knows, maybe they're going to use this and say speculators are doing something to crash a market or shut down the market. You know, you've seen the Klaus Schwab clip where he talks about a financial terrorism event, you know, that would be 90% greater than the COVID lockdowns. So, right. You know, who knows?
Yeah. You talking about the Great Reset, I think that how I see that playing into what you're saying is, I think it's hard for people to just assume there's this group of bad guys out there that can, that have collective, immense amounts of collective power that just want to do nothing but bring world suffering and pain. But now, I'm not saying that that's not true, but I'm saying I think it's harder for people to grasp. But I think if they're able to see maybe another angle on it, and that maybe, and I'm not saying this is true, but just a different angle, you know, let's look at all the variables. If we were to assume that their intentions are good, so there, the IMF, the World Economic Forum, some of these global elites, obviously a lot of some of them have nefarious intentions, but let's say some of them have good intentions, just assuming this to be true. If you look at what Marx said about communism, it was never a competing system, right? Communism, capitalism. He never saw it like that. He always saw you have feudalism, and then you have to have capitalism. You have to have it. And he was very complimentary of capitalists and how industrious they were. And so you have capitalism build on feudalism. Then at some point in time, the Marxists, or whatever you want to call them, socialist communists, they have to come in and take over, you know, what by any means necessary from the capitalists, the means of production. Because in Marx's view, if they don't, then the capitalists are going to destroy the entire system they just built, right? So let's just say that you believed that was true. And then, and if you look at, you know, the Chinese coming in and studying what happened in Russia, their takeaway is not that communism didn't work. It's that they tried communism too early. They didn't allow capitalism to flourish into its latter stages, right? So my whole point here is that I think even if you're going to assume that their intentions are good, because that's an easier pill for you to swallow, you've got to understand they're central planners, and at heart they're Marxists. And they're trying to take our world and the developed economies into a more Marxist state, because they think in their minds that that is how we propel society forward. And I've talked to like Richard Wolff as an example, who would like to say he's a Marxist, but he kind of does that just to get people pissed off. But if you listen to him, I don't think he has any nefarious intention. I just think that's how he sees us being, you know, moving to the next level of a society and bringing up the poor. So, and again, just to be super, super clear, I'm not saying that the World Economic Forum and the global elite are all these good guys that have hearts of gold and they're just kind of misplaced. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that if you have a hard time swallowing that they're all nefarious and James Bond villains, which I think most they probably are, but then you've got to look at that other angle, and that the true Marxist would kind of pursue the central planning agenda and what they're laying out in the Great Reset agenda, because they just see it not communism as being flawed, but now we're at the stage in capitalism, they call it end stage capitalism, where they need to take over. Sorry for such a long-winded rant there.
I think you're right. I mean, of course, there's going to be a certain level of them that are psychopaths, but, you know, I don't think Bernie Sanders is a psychopath. Yeah. I just think he's fundamentally flawed on what he thinks the solution is.
You know,
I don't think Elizabeth Warren is a psychopath, although it was pretty weird when she was like turned on her live stream during the elections and was like, "Let me go get me a beer." You know, I don't know if you saw that clip, but I just think she's flawed, you know? And so I agree with you. So, I mean, that's why, you know, a channel like yours is important.
How do you think they're going to try to get us to Marxism or central planning, whatever? Like, how do we get from, if you're them or if you're trying to put yourself in their position, how do you think they're going to try to get us to where we are today to where they want us to be?
Okay, well, disclaimer. I mean, some of my views, you know, are a little extreme, and I'm aware of that. But I mean, I think that what's happened so far are stages of it. The lockdown, okay. I mean, the lockdowns are a stage of it. All it really was a wealth transfer. You know, if you keep bumping minimum wage, you're probably going to have more robots. The more people have been afraid of being sick, you've got more robots. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you really believe in a nefarious, Klaus Schwab said in that symposium, there will be a financial terrorist attack that will be 90% worse than COVID. That's what he said.
Right.
So if you take him at his word for that, well, what happens if you say what if the power grids get shut down? I mean, what if the power grid shut down or the financial system gets shut down? They say terrorists did it and no one can access their portfolios or their bank accounts.
Right.
You know, those are the super nefarious angles. But I think even if that didn't happen, if you just keep on the road we're going down, I mean, people are getting, you know, you see in the tweets, like when they said that they're only giving $1,400, you know, like you had congresswomen and men writing, $1,400 doesn't equal $2,000. Give us our $600. So it's happening even without a nefarious agenda. It's just a slower process, I think.
Right. You know? It's like a weird, twisted view of creative destruction.
Yeah.
Right. It's like they're taking Schumpeter and they're trying to force a tops down type of creative destruction instead of a free market version. So if you're like, what are you doing right now to prepare for what you see coming in the future as far as your family and your wife? You know, obviously you've moved to a smaller place in Utah. I'm not sure how far away you are from the city. I don't know if you're doing any type of, you know, if you're self-sustaining out there as far as solar or, you know, what type of action steps are you taking?
You know, I'm extreme. I've got at least 6 months of food in my house, freeze-dried foods in my house. My wife's grandma lives down the street and we have over 5,000 gallons of water. We have over a year's worth of food. Cause I'm concerned. I hope it doesn't happen, but I'm concerned about a power grid shutdown. Let's hope that these people aren't as crazy as I think they are. I hope I'm wrong about that. So those types of things, I have you know, I have a large percentage of my net worth in physical silver and physical gold. More importantly than anything. Oh, and I'm thinking about leaving the country. I mean, I know that you have a passport in like St. Lucia or something like that. I mean,
you're thinking about it.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
I've got my residency visa in Colombia. So I'm making steps to get a second passport, but definitely need to pull the trigger.
Yeah. I'm interviewing your boy, Andrew Henderson in a couple hours. So I'm interested in that.
Tell my Cool.
Yeah, I will at four. So I'm pretty pumped about that because I'm, you know, I didn't think about it until my net worth got, you know, a little bit bigger to consider being able to make the move and pay for everything. But I am concerned about here. I mean, I'm one Uruguay is where I'm looking at. Their GDP was unaffected during the Great Depression. They were largely unaffected during World War II. 90% of everything consumed comes from within the country. They only import and export 10%. Huge aquifers. There's three times more cattle than people. Factory farming's illegal. So there's a lot of interesting things about this where Doug Casey has a 1,000-acre ranch. So I've been spending a lot of time researching, and I'm intending to go down there, check it out, at least maybe get a second home somewhere like that, like you've done in a residency. And then on top of that business, I think that there, you know, I own Bitcoin and all that gold and all that crap too, but I think that in my opinion, you know, and I'm just a 29-year-old guy. I've done pretty well. I'm no George Gammon in my success, but
you're way ahead of where I was at 29.
I've done pretty well. And the thing that, you know, I retired my wife at 25 years old, and the way that I was able to do that was through business. And we're taught not to have businesses. And we're so conditioned with an old business philosophy, because when I say that, someone says, well, easy for you to say, they're locking down businesses. Well, then we need the internet. We need additional sources of income, ones that are uncancelable, or if they are cancelable, we need multiple of them. And more than anything, we need to be increasing our income ceiling, right? Because I think you published the data on the average income hasn't went up in forever, you know? And so we need to be increasing our income, you know, to exceed inflation. We need more money because money's freedom. And sometimes people will say, well, happiness is more important. And that's true, but you also have a total freaking quasi-communist system that's taking over your life. And the only way you can have your freedom is money. Right. And so I think having businesses and developing additional sources of businesses is like the number one ninja Jedi moves that we can make against the system. You know, and then of course, as you're an expert on, there's all these tax things and real estate things you could do once you have more capital from your businesses. So, you know that better than me, but I always challenge people to build a new source of income this year. Make that your goal, at least one new source of income, especially a scalable one. And so like, that's kind of my personal thing. I built this new business with the I Love Prosperity channel. That's my finance channel. So I built that, and that's turned into something really good and solid. And then, you know, the rest of the things on food storage, gold, silver, and we're really looking strongly at leaving the country. And that's kind of my personal philosophies. I'm concerned about my daughter growing up in America and the world in general. And so that's why I'm just trying to weigh all my options.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I want to go back to what you're saying about starting a business or a side hustle, even if you've got a 9-to-5 job, just doing something to where you're not as dependent on the system. You might still be dependent on the internet, but at least you've got some diversity, let's say. A lot of people watching this are going to sit there and think to themselves, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. I keep hearing that. What's my downside? I know it's some extra work, but I really need to do that. Out of 100 people that hear that, maybe one, if that, will take action. And this goes back to what I was talking about at the beginning, that I'd really like you to expand on this idea of visualization. And I think that's, to me, that's a key component. And tell me if I'm wrong, because I haven't studied this stuff like you have. But to me, that's a key component in being able to get to from where you are today to where you want to be. Regardless of whether it's starting a business, whether it's losing weight, whether it's making money, investing. And I know that kind of sounds a little woo-woo, but let me just, for the people watching, let me give an example. When I was growing up, I played a lot of different sports, but one of the sports I did well, I almost turned professional, was golf. And I rarely ever talk about that. But the way you play golf well is you have to be able to visualize. So if you watch the PGA Tour, Tiger Woods, or you know any of the famous guys out there, you'll see them stand behind the ball before they hit it, before they even approach it. And they're looking down the fairway, or they're looking at the green, or looking over the water. What they're doing right there is they're visualizing the shot in their mind that they want to hit. Once they completely see it, then they go up, stand up to the ball, and then they just try to execute on what they just saw in their mind. And when I first started in business and first started in sales, I didn't know anything about it, I thought, you know what, that philosophy makes a lot of sense to me. So I'm going to try to do that when I go into my next closing, when I'm meeting a big client, let's say, and we're trying to close this big account. Before I step in the room, I'm going to take a minute or two and almost meditate, but I'm going to visualize that me saying everything that I need to say, me nailing all of their questions or rebuttals. I'm going to visualize us shaking on the deal. I'm going to visualize how much they're going to agree to. You know, is it going to be $1 million deal or whatever it is? And I noticed that when I started doing that, my ability to sell just went through the roof. And so I'm like, you know what? I'll bet you it's happening for the same reasons it happened in golf. And that's that the body can't perform what the mind can't conceptualize, or the body can only perform what the mind can conceptualize. So a lot of people hear the self-help stuff and say, oh, it's just kind of woo-woo nonsense. But if you think about why it works, to me, it makes a lot of sense. So help me. Am I right there, or am I just way off track?
That's what I believe. I mean, I've got really into it. You know, if you really want to understand the power of psychology in the mind, you know, there's a 10-part docuseries on YouTube on Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, who learned all this about the mind and the subconscious and brought all the banks together and created modern PR and, you know, got women to believe that if they smoked cigarettes, they were an individual and all that crap. And so, you know, first of all, it's not woo woo. So we now know through, this is what I'm into, personal development, neuroplasticity. So we, first of all, we know that the brain actually gets wired in certain ways. Every time you have an emotion, every time you have a thought, you activate cells in your brain. And there's something in neuroscience called Hebb's Law. And that says that nerve cells that fire together wire together. So that based off of our dominant emotions, what this is essentially saying, because all your emotions are, it's an electromagnetic frequency that shoots through your nervous system. That's all it is. And so we activate cells in our brain gets wired together. And this is why people spend their whole lives depressed or their whole lives very, you know, like no confidence. And they're, because they were wired like that, they're little and their brain plays it out there their whole life, right? And so 95% of your whole life is subconscious. And that's why everything you do now, you succeed at. You did in real estate, now you do it in this. Now you're just fucking wired to succeed. You know, it's been built into you. And for most of us, it's not. I believe it's nefarious. I believe that's more than the financial system. It's ultimately about controlling us in these ways. Well, 95% of your life is subconscious, and the word sub means below. So that means below conscious. So 95% of our whole life is below the level of conscious. And that's nuts, because that it explains a lot of things. The way you can drive down the street and not pay attention and forget where you drove, but you still got there. It's everything is subconscious. All the body is an extension of the subconscious. That's why Kobe Bryant would replay or visualize entire games in his head. And so you can feel something that isn't real. And so, you know, that's why all the most successful people in the world visualize. And it's why Steve Jobs says the world was built by people no smarter than you. And when you realize it, you can mold it, shape it, and change it however you want. So if you can build a picture in your mind, which is what I did when I dropped out of college and I read all this, instead of dismissing it, I said, why don't I suspend my disbelief and actually try this? If you can really, like, recreate your mind and you can be whoever you want to be in life, why don't I at least try? instead of just be this closed-minded idiot like I was my whole life. And so I built a picture in my mind to become a multimillionaire in my 20s and be a successful author and, you know, have my main YouTube channel be this big channel and have millions of people, my work reaching millions of people. And I was 21. I dropped out of college. I failed junior English class in high school, but I made a subconscious hypnosis for myself. And, you know, and if you get more into declassified CIA documents, they know all this stuff. That's what MKUltra was. It was about desensitizing people from the outside environment and seeing if they could erase their entire subconscious psychology to rebuild a totally brainwashed sense of self. A lot of people believe that's, you know, the John Lennon and the JFK stuff was by MKUltra patients. But there's all types of declassified documents that the CIA has done on mind control and how consciousness creates reality. And so it's pretty interesting stuff. And so I created a hypnosis and I built this picture of myself being, you know, a multimillionaire in my 20s and then achieving all these things that everyone said I was a moron and go back to school and your hair is too long, you look like an idiot. And I built this in my mind. And if you get emotionally involved with a picture in your mind, you activate emotions. Your brain doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's not real, so you still fire nerve cells in your brain. If you make it a daily habit, it's the same thing as building a callus, and your brain starts to rewire itself. And you can change your brain. It's called neuroplasticity. But then also on a more elementary, like everyday type of level, you talked about sales and stuff. You know, it's interesting in sales, right? They're like, make sure that you cross your left leg to model them so they feel comfortable, and make sure your posture is good. All that stuff is little silly stuff about trying to get on this on a subconscious wavelength or subconscious rapport with someone. And you know, when you would go get all fired up before, you'd go into those sales things and you'd freaking close it because unconsciously they don't know what's happening. 95% of your life is subconscious. So 95% of all the decisions you make is subconscious. They're picking up on your subconscious, and that's the feeling where they're like, I don't want to do business with George. I don't know why. Or you go in and you say double your normal fees and you're confident. They're like, all right, fuck yeah, let's do it. That's the subconscious exchange that happens as well. And so I think if you look at most people, dude, you know all the millionaires you know that they believe they can do it. You know, in the most simplest way, they're the ones that have clearly defined goals that say, I'm going to grow my net worth to 100 million. You know it. And then all the ones that are like, dude, it doesn't work. They're the ones that are like $9,000 in credit card debt, posting comments online and saying, you idiots, you're wasting your time. You know, there's so much psychology and neuroscience that we now know. Your mind is more powerful than you can imagine. And, you know, I believe whatever you can put in your mind, you can hold in your hand. That's what I believe.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
And I think the reason it works for me just at face level, or what I can actually see, or the action steps that maybe might not be subconscious, but the subconscious is playing a huge role, is that when you're able to visualize something, when you see it happening, it allows your it allows you to make the decisions necessary to bring that to fruition. right? Like let's use this second YouTube channel that I started, Rebel Capitalist, right? So I have a specific objective for Rebel Capitalist. Every day you're making decisions as to, you know, what video you want to produce, the thumbnail, you're looking at your backend analytics, you're looking at all these things to try to grow the channel or achieve your objectives. And I truly believe that if I wasn't able to visualize and in my mind, just like you're saying, see this channel become what I want it to become, I'd make different decisions daily that would prevent me possibly from achieving those objectives or just achieving them a lot later than I otherwise would have. It's all about, or, you know, to your point, when you're sitting there selling, when you can visualize, when you have that confidence in your head by being able to see it in advance, people can feel that. They see that in your body language. They see that in your eye contact. They can see that in the tone of your voice. And I think that's what people really pick up on, that the people, whether you're trying to sell them or whether you're, you know, trying to hire an employee, regardless. And I think it just manifests, the vision manifests itself in your outward appearance, the actions you take and the decisions you make. That's what allows us to get from where we are today to where we want to be. And so few people see what, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what most people do that where they don't achieve success is they just know they want something, but then they like, okay, I just need to take action. I need to get up earlier tomorrow. Okay, set the alarm clock. Okay, you do that for a week or two, but then you kind of fizzle out and it doesn't work. It's because you haven't been able to visualize the success yet. And is there anything to that?
That's what I believe. I mean, look, it's hard to argue that all like my mentors and older, you know, people that I, you know, not that I consider you like old, but you're older than me, like the people like you guys that I look up to, you guys all have that. It's just it's the rest of us peasants that have forgotten that, you know, it even says in the Bible, without vision, the people will perish. And so I think that it's kind of the same idea with busy work, right? Like someone's making their business and all they're doing is trying to fill up 8 hours of a day when right. It's really the 80-20 principle. And right. It's kind of like that same idea.
Yeah, I totally agree. So there's so many people that are working really hard, but they're not getting anything done. And they're always constantly working, but they're not achieving any types of results. And so what advice would you give to someone that's like, you know what, that's me. I've tried to do XYZ and I find myself taking steps toward it, just working hard, but I'm not seeing any types of results. So maybe I need to visualize better. Maybe I need to get myself in that mode. How would the average person do that? And also, too, can it be learned? Because maybe some people would be doubting themselves because of their childhood. Maybe they're saying, well, my parents never supported me, so I'm just doomed. I can never make it happen. But tell us how much of it is learned. How much of it do you have control over? And if you do have control over it, how do you make that change?
Well, we have control over everything. I mean, the craziest examples of neuroplasticity are like people that are born with like without parts of their brain that are, and I don't know every terminology for every right, aspect right. of your brain, but they're born without like the proper corneas and like the electromagnetic reflectors for your brain. Mm. And so they've taught the brain, other parts of the brain, to pick up those activities. Wow. Through neuroplasticity. I mean, and there's crazy ones like that. People that are like, their eyes weren't working or whatever it was. So neuroplasticity is insane. And what neuroplasticity means, plastic means changeable, and neuro is brain, so brain changeable. And so, yeah, I mean, I believe that. I think for number one, for myself, what changed my life was when I actually wrote clearly defined financial goals for my life, you know, in Think and Grow Rich, they talk about it, and the common thread between hundreds of the richest people in the world, clearly defined annual and monthly financial goals, I think is a great place to start, you know, and then you don't need to like light incense and grow your hair long and do weird meditations. Just go find somewhere you like to be. I like to sit in my car in my seat heater. And I just like will sit there and I'll just like listen to something inspiring, whether it's music or an audio program or quiet. And I'll just try to like screw my head back on. What do I want my life to look like? Because everything's so busy that a lot of times we live in a reactionary consciousness and a reactionary thought process where we think at the level of our own environment. And so we think at the level that our bank account says, or we think at the level of our last 9 failed relationships. Yeah, we say there's no good guys, there's no good women. And we live in a reactionary mode of consciousness, you know? And so we have to move to the creative level of consciousness. And this is what everyone that's achieved, you know, great. That's what a visionary is. It's someone who lives from an inner vision as opposed to reacting like an animal to the outside world their whole lives. Unfortunately, that's what most of us do. So I think clearly define financial goals and then just like see what it looks like in your mind. Like, what do you actually want to be? It's like, it's so silly that we think that's even like new age because we spend our whole lives being programmed to be little fucking bitches and spend our whole lives, you know, whatever everyone says I'll do it. And when I'm 65,
just a cog in the system.
Yeah. And so that creates a reactionary consciousness thought pattern our whole lives, you know? And so, I think number one, then number two, you know, as it pertains to money, you know, we talked about like the 80-20, I think, asking yourself, what are the highest income producing activities that you do? And I think most people find out 10% of their working hours are doing those, and the other 90 are things, you know, for us as YouTubers, what's the highest income producing activity we can do? Create new scripts and film them. You know, you could spend 7 hours a day making thumbnails and editing them, but that's a low income producing activity. You could scale it and get someone else to help and do. And so that's just for us. But I think making a list of high income producing activities is really powerful. And I think with that self-reflection, we find out a lot of times we're focused, you know, in the wrong areas. And so I think when we combine that and we have clearly defined goals, I mean, shit, you may already have your financial goals, you know, it may be something personal or with health, but I think when we have them and we just freaking close our eyes and we detach from the world just for a minute and screw our head back on, right? And, you know, open our eyes and make it happen, then I think powerful things can occur, but we've been taught we're powerless sheep our whole lives. And so, you know, we believe everything we think. We have to stop believing every thought we think.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about my childhood is especially my father had a very unique approach to parenting, to say the least. I could go into that, but one of the things that he did, which was just the complete opposite of the other parents I saw, you know, my buddies' dads and stuff like that. I grew up in the 70s and the 80s. And, you know, my buddies' dads were great, but they were very, you know, strict and they're very hard. And, you know, if my buddy made a mistake, they would definitely let them know because they were trying to, you know, create structure and teach them what's right and wrong and to motivate them to do well. Where my father, he didn't take the complete opposite approach, but is incredibly laissez-faire. I mean, unbelievably. And then he would also, whenever I did something, even if I failed, his response was always the same. You're the best. Don't worry, you're the best. He would tell me that. I mean, I would go and play a golf tournament, as an example. When I was like, you know, when I first started playing, I was 12, 13 years old. And as in Oregon, pouring rain, my hands are freezing cold. My dad would drop me off and then he'd come pick me up after the tournament. You know, he'd meet me right there at the scoreboard where you're handing in your scorecard and they're writing the scores up on the board. And I get like last place, as an example, when I first started, had a horrible day. And I'd get in the car, you know, I'd be totally bummed out, kind of like a tear coming down my eye. And he'd look at me, he always called me Georgie boy. He said, Georgie boy, what's wrong? I said, well, I suck, I'm terrible. You know, I got last place in the tournament. And he'd kind of laugh, he'd say, no, listen, you don't understand. He goes, I watched everyone on the range. You're the best person out there by far. You're the best person in the tournament today. You're the best golfer. I'm like, yeah, I don't know, because there's this something called a score. And unfortunately, that determines who the best golfer is. He's like, yeah, I know. I saw that stuff. Don't worry about it. You're still the best. I saw everyone hitting balls. You have the best swing. You're going to do the best. It didn't matter what it was. That hockey trouts. I remember I played ice hockey for 7 years. And we had tryouts for like an all-star team, something like that, when I was like 7 years old. And I remember during the tryouts, we were skating through these cones or something like that. And I tripped and fell over one of the cones or something. And it was just, I thought my whole entire life was ruined from that point on. I'd never make the team. Same thing, got in the car. Georgie, don't worry about it. You're the best. You're the best one out there. You're always the best. And even when I would do poorly in school and I'd get in trouble, my mom would freak out. I'd get, you know, horrible grades. He'd always say, oh, don't worry about it. You know, my mom's name is Betty. He'd say, don't worry about it, Betty. George is the smartest person, but don't worry about it. He's the best. He just constantly, nonstop. And so if you understanding the psychological components of what was going on there, how do you think that played out to what I've done over my life, or did it? And can we, can, and if it had in a positive effect, then maybe people who didn't grow up with parents like that, how can they train their brains to kind of like get into that mode? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, totally. Well, one, yeah, that's it's interesting. It's interesting to reflect on the environment we grew up in our childhood years, how it ultimately developed our own belief systems and our own self-image. You know, I mean, just as equally, maybe your dad could have been like, it's okay, but we're going to get better. We're going to get better. And maybe you developed the complex out of that. That was the opposite, where you always were so unsure of yourself and you thought you needed to get better. Like your dad made you feel safe and it didn't fill you with fear all the time. Just as easily with those other parents that fill up with us with a complex, you know, an inferiority complex. And so it's interesting to see that. Granted, almost none of us grew up with perfect belief systems as a family. I mean, I've got a 6-month-old and it's something I'm trying to focus on, but I'm sure I'm going to give her bad habits. Then you think about the fact that 75% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. This was before the lockdowns. You know, the average person can't come up with $500. Then you think about the fact that 50% of parents get divorced. So between relationships and love and money, we develop a lot of bad habits because the people we're around, you know, we're all living at a very small level of our consciousness. So most of us have them. I think for number and another interesting thing is up until the time you're seven to 8 years old, you were in a brainwave state akin to hypnosis. You have not developed higher faculties of your brain. So you're essentially in a brainwave state of hypnosis and you inherit all these things. A lot of them are negative. So I think for number one is just looking at like, what are those unconscious belief systems? It might be a self-worth issue. You might believe love is pain. You know, in one of my seminars one time, found out a guy's whole belief system was that love was pain because his parents had a tumultuous relationship. Every relationship he was in was tumultuous, and he believed love is pain, you know? And so we have these unconscious associations that control our lives. You might believe money's bad because
your success is impossible.
Success is impossible, right? We all have them. And so I think identifying them as a first step, so then we can realize that they're bullshit and it's not the truth. Because what happens is, as Mark Twain said, it's not what you know, it's what you know that ain't so. And most of us think we know these things about ourselves, but they're like 1% of who we are. And it's not true. And so I think as a step number one, identifying them. And then and I think once we identify them, then we can start to be free from them. Because you can notice, like when you're in a relationship, I was never in relationships growing up. And so and my parents had not a good relationship and they were divorced. And so I had like trauma around that. And so I was afraid of intimacy and I would ruin every relationship I was in because once it got intimate, I would somehow sabotage it. And it was because I was afraid. I saw love was pain and love is, it creates all this crap in it, you know? And so I was, once I realized that was my unconscious belief system and I learned more of this stuff, I could be able in the moment to just a little bit notice myself going, oh, I'm about to go into that. And we do it for everything. We do it on the sales call when you get to the number. It's $5,000 right before you're like, it's $5,000. It would be $5,000, but for you, it's $2,000 because we're buddies, you know? And so noticing those things, and I think then we become free of the program.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's just like someone that is trying to learn to speak better publicly that is saying, you know, a lot, or and you know, I mean, I do this myself. I watch my YouTube videos and I try to learn from them and I try to improve, and I try to not use those crutch words, I think they're called. But once you see yourself, like, you can't even hear yourself say those things, but once you hear yourself, then you recognize it every single time. It sounds like kind of the same process.
Yeah, I think that's the power of self-awareness, right? Like, and that's the number one problem, is none of us have very much self-awareness. I mean, you see it every, I go in the sauna like at 6 a.m. Sometimes these women walk in, full conversation on speakerphone. Yeah, okay, honey, I'll put the peanut butter on the counter. And it's like, we just have no self-awareness, and it carries into every area of our life. But once we level up our awareness a little bit, then we can go, oh my God, I'm going into that negative story about money or that old habit where I spend everything I get right away, and or whatever area it is. Then we can start to free ourselves from self-destruction, because I believe ultimately, you know, it's our own, we create our own demise. The central bankers didn't do it. You can be rich even though the central bankers are screwing everybody. You can still be rich. Even though they're socialists, you can still be rich. Even though your parents had the worst relationship ever and your last spouse cheated on you, you can still have an amazing relationship. And so, like, that's kind of the way I look at it.
So on that note, how important is the people you surround yourself with? We always hear that term, you're the average total of your five closest friends, something like that. And I think that is really powerful. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I have to be honest, mentors changed my whole life. You know, I was 20 and I wrote my first book. I didn't know what I was doing, and everyone told me it was a bad idea. And so I went and I sought out, you know, the top 1% in my field, and I was just begged them to mentor me. You know, it's how Jack Canfield, the creator of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, wrote the foreword to my books, and like how I got those relationships. I just said, like, please mentor me. I knew all my old friends from high school and college were, you know, just as dumb as me. And I was just bright enough to realize I was an idiot, and that's all I had going. And so, like, everything in my life, it's been the same thing now in investing, you know, is like finding, I have mentors in gold, and I have mentors in silver, and I have mentors on YouTube, and I'm not, you know, I didn't go to college. And so, like, I believe in apprenticeship, mentorship, and learning. For if you just do it, you don't even need to be that bright. If you just do what the other smart people do, you'll be successful. And I believe that. So that's number one. I care more about mentors than I do about a bunch of friends, you know. And then number two, you know, I think it's the most important thing in our life. And I think most of us, our whole lives would change if we just changed, you know. All we need to do is don't go as often and don't stay as long. Just to one or two of those relationships. Don't go as often and don't stay as long. And I think our life can change.
Yeah. Whenever I hang out with, actually, you know, I retired when I was 2012. And one of the things I miss most about that, and one of the main reasons, or one of the reasons I started the interview show, part of the YouTube channel, is just to kind of fill that need I had, or that desire. And the last couple years, I had a couple business partners that were incredible. And I just didn't have anyone else that I could kind of throw ideas off of. You know, we'd meet for dinner and talk about making money. And it was just hanging around a couple guys that just were hyper motivated and incredibly successful and always just driven, just nonstop from the morning they wake up to the morning they go to bed, just ambitious and trying to tackle the next challenge. And as a result, they were very successful. And I really missed being around that type of energy and around those type of ideas That makes sense. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to start the interviews and talk to people that I could really, you know, just like we're doing right now, really smart people in this space or macro or investing or whatever else. And it just goes back to what we're saying about how important it is to surround yourself with the right people, because their success or their failure will inevitably wear off on you. I want to go back quickly to the visualization. What do you think of vision boards? Is that something? Because I've seen that concept. I'm like, you know, that kind of makes sense to me, because I've done that inadvertently without even knowing what they are. Like if I have a goal, you know, I'll try to put it up on my computer. So periodically I'm just like, oh, I see it. It plants the image in my mind. Or is it something that it's not that helpful? Or what's your opinion on those?
I think it's different for everybody. I mean, at the end of the day, the point of an image is the same thing as subliminal programming that, you know, the CIA has been doing to us for a really long time. That's what it is. The CIA in all the, you know, the other crap, it's about subliminal messaging to implant into the subconscious. And so, like, it's the same idea. It's funny that we call a lot of these things New Age, but, like, they use it to control the population. And so that, number one. Number two, I think it can be super valuable. I think most people's problem is they're in a reactionary consciousness their whole lives. They can't even conceive of doubling their income. They can't even conceive of living in a nice neighborhood. You know, they can't even conceive of driving their dream car. Like, they just can't. And so, you know, these can be powerful things. What I'd like to do with them, because at the end of the day, the way the reprogramming of the mind really does work is, as I said earlier, it's called Hebb's Law, H-E-B-B-S, Hebb's Law. It's a term in neuroscience that tells that nerve cells that fire together wire together. Every time you have an emotion, you activate cells in your brain. And so we have to, you know, essentially reprogram your brain the same way you rebuild your muscle tissues in your arm. And so when I, whether I make a vision board or I just have my goal sitting down, I look at it and I just like spend a couple seconds closing my eyes, trying to get into the emotion or feeling of it and see it to like implant it into my mind. There's certainly a percentage of the very New Age and very personal development people, you know, their wall says they're going to be a billionaire, but they overdrafted the seventh time this month already. And, you know, they say they're going to have a Ferrari, and like, you know, they're still walking everywhere and they never achieve anything, right? And it's like, that's the very New Age crowd that a lot of people, it turns people off from personal development.
Right.
And I think that's because that crowd just thinks if you just put a vision board on your wall, like money's going to come out of your toilet tomorrow. And like, it's going to manifest itself like that. And, you know, there's that level of delusion on the opposite side, which is, you know, you can't create the life you want. The bankers have screwed us all. So there's those two sides of delusion. But I think the point of a vision board should be to open up our mind outside of this crappy matrix brainwashed mind to think we're these average people. And, you know, I like to take it where I try to engage myself emotionally, because the subconscious mind is the emotional mind. It's not rational. The conscious mind is rational. The subconscious is emotional. And that's why your childhood memories get programmed into them, especially traumas, because they're emotional. And so I like to engage emotions with whatever it is, my goal of more money, my goal of a second home in Uruguay, so that it feels real. And it, you know, from a psychological level, it engages the subconscious and starts to rewire your mind.
Yeah, you know, I'm just thinking about what I've the process I've stumbled upon, just kind of by figuring out what works and what doesn't work just in my own life without, you know, kind of under, you know, when I was in the 90s and the early 2000s, there wasn't a lot of this out there. I mean, you had Tony Robbins and stuff like that, but all the information wasn't out on the blog posts and, you know, on the internet, just easily accessible like it is today. So you kind of had to go out there and just use trial and error. And I remember everyone telling me that I needed to set goals. I needed to have a 3-year goal, a 5-year goal. So when I first started out, I would do that. But then what happened is I noticed every 3 years I'd look back, or I'd look at what I was doing, and I would ask myself if the George 3 years ago, would he believed that I'm doing what I'm doing today? And the answer was always no. Always know. Even to this day, if you look back, let's see, what are we, 2021 now? So 2018, if you would have told me in 2018 that I'd be doing what I'm doing now with YouTube and I would have done the TV show and everything that's happened over the past three, I would have told you you're crazy. I would have told you you're absolutely crazy. So what's worked well for me is if I have these big macro objectives, I mean big macro objectives, and then what I do is I try to figure out, kind of reverse engineer how I can achieve those macro objectives and maybe not put a time frame on it. But then what I do every day is just try to put one foot in front of the other. That's it. That's all I focus on. Just what can I do today, right now? What can I do in the next hour to get me just incrementally closer to that huge macro vision I have? And that seems to work well for me. Is that based in psychology, or am I just kind of an anomaly, or do you think that would work for other people?
I think everyone's different, right? Like it's not a religion. I mean, the fact is we have a lot of information from technology to know more about the brain and psychology, but hey man, that sounds like it works and it's powerful. The same things happened for me. Dude, I didn't know I was gonna make finance videos when my dad sat me down and was like, the financial system, and you know, and especially because I spent 9 years, you know, with my hair being this like, you know, personal development guy. And then, you know, I never knew I was gonna do finance stuff, and I never knew I was gonna do YouTube when I started. All I knew is I was dropping out of college and I wanted to be financially independent and write this first book. I had no idea where my life was gonna lead me, and I guess that's, you know, we all have the Joseph Campbell hero's journey when we leave home, and a lot of crazy, unexpected, you know, synchronistic coincidences, whatever you want to call them. You meet this guy and then he makes you think of a new business idea that happens out of nowhere. Yeah. And so, you know, all that stuff comes. But I think you're right, you know, it's just having this larger, my affirmation and my thing has always been, I'm a happy spiritual, I'm a happy, healthy, spiritual multimillionaire. I'm a happy, healthy, spiritual multimillionaire. And there's like a lot of different aspects of that that have birthed itself. And so, you know, I agree with you. You know, I guess the problem is most people, they have no idea what they want because they're afraid of wanting anything because they think it might not work out. And, you know, you just put one foot in front of the other and really good things start to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Those who are most successful have failed the most.
Yeah. And they've tried, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Jake, I really appreciate your time. I know we've gone a little over an hour here. I really love the conversation because it's rare for me to be able to talk about the psychological side of being successful, whether it's in a relationship or whether it's in a business or in investing. The bottom line is, you know, what we're all trying to do is build wealth and thrive in a world of out of control central banks and big governments. But there, you have to have your mind right in order to do that. That's got to come first and foremost. So really appreciate your time. For the viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you do, your YouTube channels, your websites, where can they go to check that out?
George, the revolution won't be televised because it begins and ends in our own minds.
That's right. There you go.
So, yeah, thanks for having me on. For everyone, you know, you'll Google my name and you'll see tons of personal development stuff, which for many of you will be like, this makes no sense because we're on a finance channel. So if you're looking for the finance stuff, that's I Love Prosperity. My name is Jake Ducey, and yeah, thanks for having me on. Hopefully it's not too weird and different than a lot of your stuff. But I appreciate it. And, you know, I'm honored that you invited me on, and hopefully this inspires some people.
Absolutely. All right, buddy. Can't wait to do it again. Have a great weekend.
All right. You too, George.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.